Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome to a Thursday afternoon edition of the Chase Thomas podcast. Chris Walder, my old friend, is back to talk some pro wrestling as we do every so often. Chris, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm doing good, buddy. Hanging in there. We're still in lockdown here in Ontario, and not a lot is open at this time. It's hard to get out and do a lot, and we're also snowed in as well. So just trying to keep busy, and I'm happy to be back on the podcast. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Lot is happening in the wrestling world as of late, highlighted by LA Knight's debut at NXT Vengeance Day over the weekend. This was something that just seemed obvious so long ago. I don't know how you feel about it, but Eli Drake just had everything you would assume the WWE would want in a character and a professional wrestler, and it finally happened under a different name. Not a big Eli Drake name person anyway, but LA Knight, do you like it? And do you like his fit there?
The name certainly stands out. When I heard it on the pre-show there for the last NXT TakeOver, I thought it was a really cool name. And yeah, I mean, every time I saw him compete in, you know, on NWA Power or in Impact Wrestling, you just got the vibe that he was destined to eventually make it to WWE. I didn't anticipate him going to NXT per se. I thought he was more so a main roster guy. He fit that bill more so. But the fact that he's in NXT, he could showcase his mic skills. And they're always looking for bodies there. I'm not exactly expecting five-star matches from him. I was never a fan of his in-ring work. I think he's even better in an announcing role or just as a straight promo guy. But it's another guy to throw into the picture there, into the world championship picture there in NXT or the North American title picture. So I'm curious to see how this plays out.
Absolutely. And it's kind of cool to just get new names. Taya Valkyrie, obviously, making, we don't really know yet whether or not she's going to go straight to the main roster, right? Like, that's still TBD, I assume.
The NXT women's roster is pretty full at the moment. I would just assume that Taya Valkyrie will end up on Raw or SmackDown. I assume Raw because her husband is there, right?
Yes. So, but he wasn't on Raw this week. Miz talked about that. Was there? I don't really know why Morrison was not around.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I mean, hopefully he's okay. I think your mind jumps to like it's COVID related or something's wrong with him every time someone doesn't appear on Raw, especially because they're lacking bodies to begin with. But here's hoping he's okay. But yeah, having Taya Valkyrie there with John Morrison around, I mean, it just makes sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, man. Well, there's some television that I want to get into this week. Did you have a chance to peruse the just electrifying, easy viewing experience that is Monday Night Raw this week?
Monday Night Raw is a chore and a half for me. I try to follow along on Twitter more so. I can't invest 3 hours of my day every Monday night. I was curious about the gauntlet match that closed the show, so I caught a bit of that, and I heard about what was going on with The Miz pulling himself out of the Elimination Chamber, being replaced by Kofi Kingston, who should have been in there in the first place. We'll see if maybe that incorporates Ali. Maybe Ali takes him out and takes his spot to continue that storyline, but when it comes to wrestling each week, my time is committed to AEW Dynamite and the occasional Friday Night SmackDown. Monday Night Raw, they have to kind of string together a few good shows before I return.
Yeah, I think the key, I mean, Raw, I don't watch any, outside of the pay-per-views, I don't watch anything live. I watch it early the next morning. It's just not, I can't do it at night and just can't go through all that. And there's other sports on and I can't. So I watch it first thing the next morning on delay and all that kind of stuff. And it's actually really nice watching SmackDown first thing Saturday. I enjoy it. But the gauntlet match that you talked about, AJ stole the show. AJ put on a clinic. Drew survived for a long time. And there was a lot of back and forth on Twitter about what sense it made to put Drew through that and then lose, because it was clear that he was not going to win and be the last entrant. So why would you put your WWE World Champion in this match right before a big pay-per-view where he doesn't even win? So Sheamus obviously wins. He pinned Drew via his big kick, if you will. And that happened. But Sheamus obviously not going to win the chamber. Sheamus wearing just incredibly odd garb at the moment. Not a big fan of the hat and his entire get up and character, but you know, it's all about best friends breaking up in professional wrestling these days. And so AJ stole the show, but it was something I wrote down in my notes where it's just this company just overthinks the little things, where it's like, there's no reason AJ should not be the champion right now. Just let him be full Kenny Omega, heal Kenny Omega with his bodyguard, and give him some people and just let him run roughshod over Raw. Like, he's still just the most talented guy, and it's not even close. And heel AJ is still my favorite AJ in this company. And just do AJ John Cena for the title at WrestleMania. Drew stinks, and we don't have to continue doing this. We don't have to start off with him coming out and just say, shut the hell up to Miz and Miz TV to open, and then, like, him launching the briefcase and all that. Like, he, I don't know. None of it was good. But I've talked to so many different people and who just love professional wrestling like us, Chris. And it's interesting to get the perspectives on Drew. And the majority of people I talk with who cover this don't get it either. So I'm not alone. Where are you? Because we haven't talked about Drew that extensively on this podcast. Where are you at with Drew McIntyre billed as the Roman equivalent on Monday Night Raw?
I mean, I think Drew McIntyre has been one of the few things that WWE has got right during this pandemic era. I'm not saying he should be pushed to the degree that he is. I mean, he's been WWE champion for a bit. He had that little hiatus in between when he dropped it to Randy Orton, which probably shouldn't have happened in the first place, but that's neither here nor there. I think he just looks like a Vince McMahon guy. He's come a long way from the Drew McIntyre who was in 3MB and, you know, the chosen one when he first arrived on SmackDown many, many years ago. But I like him. I think he can really go in the ring. He's a big man who's fairly agile. He hasn't had any blowaway matches. I would agree with you in the sense that AJ Styles, I think he's on a different level right now. I was kind of torn when he was paired up with Omos or whatever his name is this week. I feel like they changed that on a drop of a dime. And AJ Styles, sure, he would be great in kind of that Kenny Omega mold, but they don't see him like that. And it was nice to see him kind of get a bit of a run in that gauntlet match. But Drew McIntyre is obviously like their long-term project, someone they think that can be the cornerstone of a Monday Night Raw for the foreseeable future. My big question with him right now is that he doesn't really have a clear direction heading into WrestleMania. I don't see him and Sheamus being a match that can close, you know, a night one or a night two on the grandest stage of them all. So it remains to be seen who's the kind of guy that you could pair with him at this point. Maybe, you know, I've heard rumors about a John Cena, you know, who's always teasing not being on the show, but he eventually just shows up. Maybe a John Cena Drew McIntyre pairing would be good for Drew, but I'm not nearly as down on McIntyre as, say, you and your colleagues.
He's overpushed. Like, he should just be, like, he's booked correctly in the sense that, like, this is how Roman Reigns should have been booked years ago. But the sword coming out, I'm a big Scottish guy, all the different Scottish cyborgs and all the different nicknames. And there's something just not interesting about him. Like, he's just not interesting. And he is a good hand. He is someone he's a good B+ guy, but he's treated like an A+ guy at this point. And his body, like, he's a great story. He seems like a great dude outside the ring, but he's just not, he just doesn't fit. And, like, I'm with you. There's no plan for him at WrestleMania, and I just don't think there's a good option here. So he should lose at Elimination Chamber, and it looks like with Miz pulling himself out. And that's good that they thought about this, because there was no sense for Miz to be in that match, considering he has the briefcase. And his, after getting embarrassed by Drew to close that opening segment this week on Miz TV, his quote, like, content being awesome, I thought was good. And he was unhinged but in control. And this whole thing about, you know, I'm taking this in my own hands, like, oh, I've done this before, I've become champion this way, I've main evented WrestleMania, I think all of that made sense. And I'm glad that that was the storyline throughout the show, was Miz giving up his spot, trying to give it to Morrison, who, like we said, was not there. But then ultimately we get this, elevates Kofi back into the scene. Like, he just hasn't been doing anything since moving to Raw. And they had a really good match, and I enjoyed Kofi winning this. I'm glad Kofi's in it. And honestly, I wouldn't be opposed to Kofi winning Elimination Chamber and just running it back with Kofi Mania Part 2 and doing Kofi versus AJ. Just do something like that. Like, I don't know. I just think everything that's interesting on Raw should not include Drew McIntyre. I just don't think there's a path. Like, Edge makes no sense for him unless you turn Drew, which I guess wouldn't be the worst thing. But I don't know. Where do you want Edge to go? Like, what do you think? Do you think it's just going to be Roman? Because it doesn't look like it.
I don't know. I think it's pretty obvious at this point that it's going to be Roman Reigns. They teased it on the previous episode of SmackDown when Edge didn't even say anything.
Like, whoever wins Elimination Chamber faces Roman.
Oh, yeah. Well, on the SmackDown Elimination Chamber, yeah, they face Roman that same night, though.
Oh, is it? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the big thing there. It's not the winner goes on to Mania to face Roman. Roman later in the evening.
Yeah, that's right. Which is a bad deal. Bad deal for that.
Yeah,
one.
I mean.
I guess they will do Edge, Roman, and they just want to do the spear spot. Like, that's their double spear. They just really want to get that out there. And he's someone who can lose to Roman. Like, it doesn't hurt Edge to lose to Roman, and they can close the show and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I guess Edge, Roman probably does happen.
It's the biggest match you could do right now in the company, to be perfectly honest with you. Edge, Drew McIntyre, you back yourself into a corner with two baby faces. You're not turning Drew ahead of WrestleMania. And Roman Reigns is your biggest and most popular heel in the company right now. So him and Edge, the spear versus spear storyline, you can have some really good build heading into that main event.
I don't know. I think, honestly, I would say Roman versus Seth versus Brock is the biggest match they could do at this moment. Like, I think the callback there of their history, you got Burn It Down back for Seth, Brock coming back with his old protege or old manager, Paul Heyman managing Roman. I think that has legs. That's something that they should probably do at SummerSlam or something, with them all on the same show. But also Brock just not coming back until fans are back in attendance is also going to be a problem there. But I guess realistically speaking, that is the best they can do. Is Ric Flair the father of Lacey Evans?
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
newborn child.
Thank God they cleared that up on wrestling sites afterwards, that she is in fact pregnant. Otherwise, I was ready to crown Charlotte and Lacey Evans the worst storyline of the year, and it's only February. It's awful stuff. I mean, it's cheesy. We know Ric Flair.
Can I introduce you to the Dominic Mysterio and Mysterio family versus Murphy and Seth Rollins storyline?
Well, that's from last year.
Well, no, it's still gone on. It still happened this year. Yeah, it's kind of disappeared the last couple weeks, but no, this has been a thing this year. They have had more matches this year on SmackDown since moving over. Yes.
This is infinitely worse.
Yeah.
And Charlotte should be the top, if not, you know, the 1A, 1B with Sasha Banks right now. She should be used a lot better than she currently is. With Lacey Evans, who, yeah, great. She's pregnant. I'm glad they cleared that up. She can get pulled out of this match with Asuka, who no one was looking forward to at the Elimination Chamber. I'm sure a lot of people forgot that match was supposed to happen. We'll probably end up maybe getting Charlotte versus Asuka at the pay-per-view. You know, tag team partners, what a lousy reign with the tag team titles that was. Just kind of came and went without any, you know, show of solidarity between the two at all. Maybe we'll get a title match between them at the pay-per-view, and hopefully Charlotte can go on to bigger and better things after this storyline with Evans, which is just total trash. But again, it's Monday Night Raw, and that's kind of what I expect at this point.
Yeah, I don't know. That's tough. It's now time for my favorite segment. Lince Dorado hype. He was backstage with Graham Metalik and Matt Riddle. Matt Riddle, I have a lot of thoughts there. I don't know where you're at with Matt Riddle, but the comedy's not for me, but I could see Vince McMahon enjoying it.
You don't dig the Air Bud jokes?
No, it's just not for me. Not for me. But he also pinned MVP clean, and it looks like MVP may have gotten a little banged up in this match against the Hurt Business. But I will say, Lince Dorado, really good talker behind the scenes. Like, he was, I thought he was really good in that backstage segment. I'm like, oh, give him more time. What else? Like, let him get a shot. Let him talk and really do something with Lucha House Party. Do something with them. Like, and also just rename them, not Lucha House Party more. Let them get serious characters and serious stuff. And, you know, they're good. I don't know. I was impressed with Lince Dorado backstage.
God, the bar is extremely low when it comes to, you know, these short backstage segments where Lince Dorado, of all people, gets to say a few words and all of a sudden we're like, yeah, we want to see more of this guy.
He's good. He can talk.
He's fine. I mean, I don't really care to hear him talk at this point. They've been so mismanaged. You know, one week you see them get squashed on Monday Night Raw. They challenge for the tag team titles. Nothing comes of that. And then they were in the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic, you know, and then you're supposed to take them seriously there. Lucha House Party is just kind of an afterthought at this point. They're just kind of there to be the side pieces to Matt Riddle in this feud with the Hurt Business, which is never ending. But I love to see them in the ring, but behind the mic, I mean, yeah, I guess if you want to.
Yeah. Are we getting Shane versus Braun at WrestleMania? Is that why Shane's back? Is that what we're doing?
Oh yeah, of course. Isn't this what he does every year? He faces the big giant on the show. You know, he's done stuff with Kane, The Undertaker, The Big Show, now Braun Strowman. He's gonna jump off of something. Maybe he'll do the Kevin Owens spot that he desperately wants to do, where he jumps off the giant ship in Tampa Bay there.
I don't like this. I don't like any of it. But at least Naomi's back on television. Do something with Naomi Company. Like, do something with Naomi. Are you keeping up with Impact since the transition with AEW coming over and New Japan coming over?
I'm a little bit more interested, yeah, ever since they have guys like, you know, obviously Kenny Omega, Private Party, getting a shot at the tag team titles. I'm curious. It's like every week now you're eager to see who's going to appear. And now we, of course, have Juice Robinson and David Finlay from New Japan Pro Wrestling. That was a bit of a surprise.
They were good. They had a really good match with Reno Scum. Reno Scum's actually perpetually underrated. They're actually a really good tag team.
Yes.
I enjoyed this match a lot. They talked after, so Good Brothers came out, made some jokes about kind of what they were, their relationship in New Japan, and Juice and Finlay were like, we're not actually young boys anymore. We've been around a long time now.
Yeah.
But they can't talk. Like, just the dichotomy between the Good Brothers talking to Juice and Finlay talking was unreal. Like, I'd written down my notes. I was like, oh no, pull the mic. Oh no. Oh no. Just god awful. like god awful. Just the no charisma, no idea what they're doing, no cadence, no understanding at all. And just the paradigm between those two was just unreal. Like, Good Brothers are just so good. And it's just, whenever I watch the Good Brothers on AEW, whether it's AEW or Impact, it's like, how did this company not just hand them the mics every week? Like, how did Vince not just listen to them talk and be like, yeah, like, why are we not giving these guys mic time and opportunities in WWE? Like, I just don't understand why they just did not get the time of day. It just makes no sense to me. I don't know. What do you think?
The Good Brothers are better in this kind of setting, along with AEW, where they kind of have more free reign, more creative control when it comes to their promos. When they're saying these scripted Monday Night Raw-esque style promos, it just comes off very forced and not akin to the kind of characters and men that they are behind the scenes. And you obviously, like kind of you, what you alluded to there with the promo with Juice Robinson and David Finlay, I think Juice Robinson is an extremely charismatic performer. You didn't necessarily get that from that promo. David Finlay, I mean, I understand that they came up as young boys together. They trained in the dojo together. I don't see a lot of chemistry between the two. I hope I'm kind of proven wrong in the coming weeks, and I assume they're going to get a shot at the Impact Tag Team titles somewhere down the road. But I think Juice Robinson is a league above where David Finlay is at this point. But again, it's cool just to see New Japan guys kind of coming in and, you know, working with Impact again. Maybe we'll see a few more in AEW as well.
Perhaps. Yeah, we shall see. Last thing on Impact that I wanted to pick your brain about. Well, actually, this is a two-parter. Are you a Trey Miguel guy? Because he is now being presented as their Ricochet, their new star that they have locked down. He returned. He did not join the rest of his former tag team partners, the Rascals, now MSK in NXT. He returned and new look, treated as a rising star in this company as an individual guy. He had a good four-way match with Willie Mack, Daivari, and Suicide. It was pretty short, but like, I don't know, because you know what didn't help, and this is something I'd written down, was that like Josh Alexander and TJP opened this show. And I wrote about this on ChaseTomsPodcast.com, but TJP is maybe the best professional wrestler going, just weekend over, like, just his story.
Oh, yeah, this is your hot take that you had last time.
He's so damn
time,
good.
Yeah.
But also, Josh Alexander is really, really good. And these two, just, they had a really technical showing. Like, Matt Stryker, also, on commentary, I think he's the best play-by-play guy in wrestling at the moment. So I'm really glad that he moved over, and just his calling and just how into everything he actually is, and he's not calling their champion the wrong name on their shows, like a certain AEW commentator last night. But he's so good, and D'Lo's charisma is just awesome, and I love their stuff. But like the counter holds by TJP to the Octopus holds to Josh Alexander going for the ankle locks, and that being reversed into an Octopus hold. Like, there's just so much stuff in this match, and it was so quick, and it made sense because Alexander was trying to keep TJP on the ground, and TJP can work technical, he can work through the air, he can do whatever. I don't know, man, this match was just everything you want in modern professional wrestling. And then you watch Miguel, and I'm like, Trey Miguel is not better than either of these two, and I think he's still super young and he's got time. But like, I don't know. Like, I think the Sami Callihan stuff with him backstage, where he's like, you just don't have the passion, and like pushing him to be more, makes sense to me. But I don't know. I think Impact might be going a little too hard too soon on Trey Miguel. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I totally understand that. I mean, I always dug Trey Miguel as the third wheel to the Rascals when they were doing those That 70 Show-esque promos, which I thought were hilarious. And obviously when they went off to NXT to become MSK, it kind of felt inevitable that Miguel was going to join them. But then he came out with a statement afterwards and said that there was like family reasons why he decided to stay with Impact. It kept him in the area, which is totally fine. But Impact clearly sees more in him than I think a lot of people do at this point. It's not to say that he's not a great performer. Between the ropes, I think he's one of the best the company has. But I need to see more character work from him. And to put him up against a guy like Sami Callihan, who's, you know, one of the better characters in Impact Wrestling, I think it just kind of shines a light more so on Miguel that he needs a lot more work in that regard. But again, if he's their project, then I totally understand why they're doing this with him. I just think it's a lot too soon for the guy.
Yeah, absolutely. I that's where I'm at. AEW last night, what did you think of this show? Chris?
Exploding barbed wire death match spectacular. Mm-hmm. That was my biggest takeaway. But in all honesty, you know, I can always count on AEW to give me some pretty solid matches. And I said this on Twitter last night. Follow me on Twitter at Walder Sports. The tournament match, the women's eliminator match between Riho and Serena Deeb. In my opinion, for my money, I think that was one of the best women's matches that company has had. And they haven't had a lot of them, to be fair. But Serena Deeb is maybe the most underrated and one of the best acquisitions that company has ever had, because that women's division needed a spark. And Serena Deeb, when she came in with the NWA Women's Championship, she instantly became one of the best performers in that kind of mix right there. I mean, you have your Hikaru Shidas, your Britt Bakers, of course, but Serena Deeb is probably pound for pound the best wrestler of that group. And even in a losing effort against Riho, who obviously is coming back after this 11-month hiatus because of the pandemic, and they're obviously looking to push her in this tournament, someone like Serena Deeb made her look like $1 million. And even in a losing effort, she didn't look any worse off because of it. So give me more Serena Deeb. And I think that was my biggest takeaway from AEW Dynamite last night, was another really good match in this women's eliminator tournament, which this division has sorely needed.
Yeah, I thought this was the best match of the night. I thought the main event was cool. I think the main event post-match angle was better. I was blown away. I think Deeb and Riho have just amazing chemistry. And that ending sequence of the reversals with all the different pins and Riho getting her in that way was super smart. And Riho is just incredible. Like, Riho is... It doesn't make any sense how good she is sometimes when you look like the 90-pound stuff and everything. And you're like, this shouldn't look like this, but she's great. And Serena Deeb, like I agree with you there. She's also awesome, and hopefully we get more of this, because AEW has struggled making sure that the women's division is propped up on each show. So this was good.
Another subtle thing that they did as well was show highlights from the Japanese side of the bracket, which I didn't even think they were going to do, because usually I remember when they did the women's tag team tournament, they kind of just had like a little bar at the bottom kind of revealing the results and whatnot. And maybe they had just a little clip here and there, but they showed match by match the winners and the losers. And I think to give more legitimacy to this tournament, because ultimately at the end of this, whether it is someone from the Japanese side or the American side, you're having them challenge Hikaru Shida for the title at Revolution. So you want everyone to feel a lot bigger because of this tournament, whether it's like a Yuka Sakazaki or an Aja Kong coming out of the Japanese side. You need to have the American audience familiar with them. And I think having these highlights kind of was a really nice subtle touch by AEW.
Yeah. I'm excited for sure. I thought the best like moment was Paige missing Hardy on the buckshot to close that opening segment. I thought that was a really good camera shot.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they caught that, because him flying off and Matt just barely missing his head getting completely taken off. Cause I love the buckshot bomb. Like, I heard the buckshot, Larry, because that's one of my favorite moves in professional wrestling. No Sammy Guevara this week, as the Inner Circle refers to him as being dead to Chris Jericho. I don't know. I think Paige versus Hardy will be good. I'm glad it's going to be a money match. Literally, I thought that was a good way of doing it. Kingston with a good promo of, like, I got to get rid of you by beating you, because it feels like him and Mox have been going at it for a while. And there was a point in time several months ago where it's like, oh, I would just put the belt on Kingston. If there is something, if you're waiting on fans to do Kenny versus John, just put it on Kingston for a little bit through some shenanigans, and then put it back on Mox when the fans are back. But I loved the Kenny Omega going to school segment. Did you like this?
I wasn't really a fan. I just thought it kind of felt, it just felt like filler. Once AEW Dynamite came to a conclusion, I was like, what was necessarily the point of that? Are we supposed to look at him like he's a scumbag because he's talking this way to children? Like, sure, he's already a heel. We didn't need this segment. We see a bunch of kids beating up Michael Nakazawa. I just kind of left it feeling like, I could have done without it.
interesting. I thought it was funny. Like, the very busy with charity line from Don Callis was great. And then someone asking if the Young Bucks, a child asking if the Young Bucks were in love to Kenny Omega, I thought it was funny. I don't know. And we hate not.
It was total filler. Yeah, but it was just, it was filler.
But see, I like stuff like that. I don't, like, I think All Elite Wrestling struggles with this sometimes where it's like, they just have banger after banger. And it's like, I can't just have wrestling matches. I got to have some other stuff. You got Impact Wrestling does this better than anybody else. Is Impact has these really authentic conversations backstage, like TJP talking to Scott D'Amore, and then Ace Austin coming in, and like TJP, like as Austin Lee's is like, I thought it was Ace's up, and like they make jokes. They just talk like normal human beings all the time backstage, and you see all the different stuff. And they have the Swingers Place and James Storm and Chris Sabin drinking Bud Light unapologetically on his teeth. Like, it's just they have fun with it, but I think they know that you can't just have, especially with no fans, where there's getting energy in these matches is hard. I think you need a lot of these segments, and I think these companies need to take more chances like this off screen, where it's like, hey, we need to fill 5 minutes. Here's this, because like, this one didn't bother me. The Jay and Shaq 5 minute thing of them playing basketball was really weird. Like, what are we doing? What are we doing? What is this? How does this help the Cody and Red Velvet match? How is this how they're prepping shooting basketballs against Cody and Red Velvet? What?
He can't do anything. Like, he's not going to be on AEW Dynamite prior to this big mixed tag team match. Yeah. So yeah, sure, have him shoot some free throws, play some one on one.
He shot a three, sir.
He shot a three. One more three than he shot during his playing career. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you that much. But again, it's just the image of seeing Shaq on a wrestling program is supposed to get you excited. And of course, it's on TNT, which he has his, you know, Inside the NBA on. So I was fine with that because at least it's going to lead to something. But this segment with the children with Kenny Omega, I see where you're coming from, where it's like, yeah, just kind of throw some things at the wall and see what sticks. Definitely now when there's no fans in attendance. But you know, at least have it mean something when it's all said and done. And I don't think a segment like that really accomplished that.
It's fair. It's fair. What did you think of the ending to this show? What do you think of the double V-triggers from Omega, Good Brothers holding Mox, and they get the rematch? It's going to be Mox versus Omega. And like you said, this exploding barbed wire death match. I thought this was great, and I think this is the right conclusion. And also, I don't know where they're going to go with this. I really have no idea which way they'll go.
Well, the closer we get to Revolution and the fact that we didn't have a main event announced for the pay-per-view, I was kind of like, all right, this is the moment. We're probably going to get Kenny Omega versus Jon Moxley, a return match for the AEW World Championship. And then, you know, Omega starts getting into his promo. And the more he talked, I was just thinking to myself, oh my God, are they going to do a Buried Alive match at the pay-per-view, which is so like old school WWF, just by the way he was saying that no matter what I do to you, Moxley, you always keep coming back. You're so stubborn. What do I have to do to kill you? And then he just goes into Moxley's face and he's like exploding barbed wire death match. And my first initial reaction was like, man, can they really get away with this, like in Jacksonville, doing a match to this degree? But at the same time, you think about Kenny Omega, someone who, you know, constantly refers to himself as the best in the world, and something that he's always wanted to do is kind of be the best in many different styles of professional wrestling. And Lord knows we haven't seen a match like this in quite some time. You look back to like the early 90s in FMW Japan, where this was very common. You know, you think of like the Terry Funks of the world and the Onitas, where they were just, you know, fire and sparks and barbed wire and blood and whatnot. But now we're going to see this in a mainstream, you know, wrestling promotion. And I also go back to the Full Gear match that we saw, the Lights Out match between Jon Moxley and Kenny Omega, which I think rubbed a lot of people the wrong way because it was far more intense and brutal than many people probably anticipated when they were suplexing each other into barbed wire and using shards of glass and tearing the mat up. At least now you can kind of anticipate that this match is going to be extremely gory and bloody and brutal, so you can kind of build up your emotions and your anticipation. You know, at the end of the day, it's Jon Moxley versus Kenny Omega. Personally, I would prefer to see them in a straight-up wrestling match because I think they're two of the best in the world in that regard. But just the sheer interest of what the hell these two are going to pull off, and maybe this is a chance to write off Jon Moxley as well because, you know, of course, his wife is pregnant. She's going to be due very, very soon. Maybe this is the way of getting him off television for a bit.
Yeah. We'll see. We shall see. All right. Well, that's all I've got, Mr. Walder. Is there anything else that you'd like to add on the pro wrestling front before we wrap up here?
Actually, yeah. I mean, for anyone who listens to my podcast, The Walder Sportscast, I usually dive more so into basketball than anything else. But on my next episode, which I'm hopefully going to have released on Monday, I'm going to be having Shane Taylor from Ring of Honor Wrestling,
Ooh, nice.
who's going to be challenging Roosh for the ROH Championship on February 27th, I believe. So we're going to talk about that match. And I'm also recording that show with him the day after his six-man tag team title shot with the Soldiers of Savagery against the Bandido and Flamita, and I forget who's the other part of that team, but they're challenging for the ROH six-man tag team titles, so maybe he'll have some championship gold around his waist when I record the show. But for any wrestling fans out there, Walder Sportscast episode 31 released this Monday with Shane Taylor.
All right, go do that. Man, keep up the great work. I'm happy for you, my man, and all the continued success, and we'll talk pro wrestling soon for that guy up there in Ontario, Canada, for myself down here in Knoxville, Tennessee. That is all we've got, but more coming on this podcast after this. Thanks, guys.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.